YSS 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. While no firm conclusion has yet been made as to the origins of the COVID-19 virus, and several U.S. agencies have judged that the pandemic was started by natural transmission, the Wall Street Journal reporting today that the U.S. Energy Department has now concluded that an accidental lab leak is most likely how it began. Intense fighting this weekend in Ukraine as the battle for Bakhmut continues. ABC's Patrick Reval is in Kyiv.
Video released by Russian state media showing the devastation there. Ukraine's top ground forces commander in the city, helping personally direct the defense. Both sides believed to have already suffered thousands of casualties, according to Ukrainians fighting on the ground. But Ukraine saying it is holding the line for now.
A temporary halt on the cleanup of potentially toxic soil from the East Palestine, Ohio train derailment after soil and water was apparently dumped in Michigan and Texas by railroad operator Norfolk Southern. Tuesday, the Supreme Court to consider Republican challenges to President Biden's student debt relief program. This is ABC News. Several federal agencies and Norfolk Southern officials are facing a new round of criticism of their handling of the East Palestine toxic rail cleanup efforts this weekend after the EPA announced Saturday they were hitting the pause button. ABC's Philipoff has more.
In Houston, Texas, officials concerned that more than 500,000 gallons of toxic wastewater from the derailment site has been transported into the city. In Wayne County, Michigan, truckloads of contaminated soil and water from the derailment coming to a licensed hazardous disposal facility. Officials there furious.
Wayne County government not knowing that they're coming, which way they're coming, how safe the trucks are that are coming, is something that has got us all very, very irritated.
The EPA now instructing Norfolk Southern to immediately pause the shipping of waste off-site.
Nearly 30 million Americans are bracing for a significant cut in their food stamp benefits this week as pandemic-era payments come to an end. Dave Packer, ABC News.
There is nothing better than squeaky Wisconsin cheese curds. Except maybe 3 hours of great Wisconsin radio. Extra sharp weekends on Civic Media and on the app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A lot of people are spending a lot of time looking at screens these days. One Wisconsin doctor says he's worried about prolonged exposure to blue light and how unhealthy that can be. Mike Moen reports.
In addition to the sun, digital screens are a source of blue light. Optometrist Bryce Christofferson in western Wisconsin says one risk from overexposure is interfering with the body's circadian rhythm, the internal clock that regulates a person's sleep cycle.
If you're working on a tablet, your computer, or smartphone, or whatever before you go to sleep, it can make it harder to fall asleep.
That can produce problems such as lower productivity and headaches. He suggests wearing blue light blocking glasses when looking at a screen for long periods. Other tips include taking breaks around every 20 minutes from digital screens by looking at something else at least 20 feet away for 20 seconds. And of course, limit screen time before bed. Dr. Scott Edmonds, Chief Eye Care Officer for United Healthcare Vision, says specialists became concerned during the pandemic about blue light exposure as more people were relying heavily on digital screens at home. He worries that soon, as some of the same concerns will surface about blue light that happened with ultraviolet light.
The photoreceptors can certainly process blue light, but it puts a lot of strain on them, and we're concerned that over time the retina will become damaged and we'll start to see age-related macular degeneration from this, like we did with UV light.
In addition to taking screen breaks, eye care professionals recommend making sure your computer screens are clear and clean as researchers continue to study potential dangers. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection. Find our Ray Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Civic Media promised you something big to celebrate our new and still growing network of radio stations. When we announced the one-day $1 million advertising giveaway for Wisconsin businesses, you responded.
Just wanted to echo your sentiments about the advertising. That's really a cool deal and really remarkable.
$1 million of free advertising. Now, if you missed this chance to work with our team, go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. One of our local sales pros will get right back to you. Civicmedia.us and sponsorship.
What grows in the forest? Trees? Sure. Know what else grows in the forest? Our imagination, our sense of wonder. And our family bonds grow too. Because when we disconnect from this and connect with this, we reconnect with each other and build family memories we will carry with us forever. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. It's easy. Just put in your zip code to find family-friendly outdoor destinations near you. You'll also find guides to free activities, games, and amazing forest facts. Give the magic of the outdoors to your kids and reconnect with your family. Find a forest near you at discovertheforest.org. That's discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Cripescast. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens, and this is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. We are brought to you by Jelly Good Soda. And here is this week's episode. Brittany Schmidt. I had dog crap on my shoe.
Something was smelling. And I
was it smelling?
Yeah. I was trying to figure it out.
I don't know what's more bizarre, the fact that I didn't notice it visually or smellingly, aromically.
Well, there you didn't notice it at all. Yeah, I know. But
we could Google it.
We're not smart. I don't have my phone on me, so.
Wow. That's super, like, healthy of you.
Yes.
Mine is right there.
Yeah.
Okay. When you're going out to dinner with a friend or whatever, and they put the phone upside down on the table, what does that mean to you?
That they're trying to pay attention to dinner.
Okay, what if it's this side up?
I don't really think about it. I think face down is just you're trying to pay attention and be mindful. And then face up is you're a little more open. But it depends. If it's not on do not disturb, then they're not going to get any notifications anyway. But if it's not, then it's like maybe they're waiting to get out of that dinner. Maybe they're waiting for a call.
Give me anything.
Yeah.
Even if it's on do not disturb. Yeah. Somebody please
just
disturb
me. Just a CNN update. They're like, I got to go.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
There's a storm in Oklahoma. Yeah.
But there are some people that just keep it in their pocket. See, I take it out of my pocket because I'm pretty sure, even though a lot of studies have said otherwise, that it's just radiating whatever's going on in my pocket.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think putting it right there is getting away from the radiation.
Oh, I think it's a millimeter game.
I don't know about that.
Really?
I think we're all pretty
screwed. We could Google it right now and probably not get a definitive answer.
Yeah, they're not going to tell us the truth. Because they want us to stay on our phones.
That's true.
So
that is true.
We are kind of like the test rabbits of the what are these phones doing to us generation.
As a creative, do you think the phone is a plus or a minus?
A minus.
Really? Full on minus.
I think it's a full, for me, I think for a lot of people it can be a plus because I think a lot of people use it to, you know, research stuff and find inspiration. But I just go on Instagram and compare myself to everyone else. And I'm like, well, it's over. I'm not there yet. So, and then I just go on Reels and I just watch dumb until my brain turns to mashed potatoes. And that's it.
Don't you feel like there is a certain, like you feel hungover really quickly. It's like this. Oh, you were about to say something.
No, just depressed almost.
Is
like,
that what that is?
Yeah.
It's, when you watch for a certain amount of time and you just get this, it's almost this cloud, this fog.
Yeah. We're not supposed to be on our phones that much. Like, I just don't think we're supposed to have that much information. We're not supposed to have that much feedback, especially like comments. My comments are insane and like very quickly will make me be like, I should quit, you know, but it's like.
That's so sad to hear.
Yeah, but being a female comic is not easy. So it's as like, I literally just looked at my phone before I left it downstairs and someone was just like, women suck at comedy. And I'm like, every day. That's what I get every day. And I'm just like, I wish. And then you can't deactivate comments because it screws up the algorithm. So it's like this whole thing. But I was reading, I forget which book, but it was talking about like depressed kids because kids are on their phone all the time, coming into like the doctor's office, and the doctor won't prescribe medicine. They'll be like, get outside, go for a walk, and put your phone down for a couple hours a day. Come back and tell me if you still have the issue. And the issue goes away. Like the depression, the fog, like all that stuff lifts if you just get outside and put your phone down. So I think on a large scale, it's bad for us, but on a personal level, for me, it's bad. It's not good. That's why I just have a social media manager run everything, and I try not to look at any of it.
Yeah, and you just put all that depression on your social media manager.
She doesn't care because it's
That's
not
true.
Her
you need
art.
That separation. I'm just kidding with you.
Yeah,
I know. See why your phone was left downstairs.
Yeah.
No, but that is true. You want to find sort of that that wall of separation from like, because I'll even do a thing where someone showed me where you could find like your followers and unfollowers. And I really don't like them for that information.
People who unfollow you, but you have to download an app. You have to like
No, you can see like on a daily basis.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean that like because on a business profile you can see, but you can't see who specifically is unfollowing you. You can see how many people are unfollowing
you. I don't want that app.
Yeah, no, there's an app, and this is a whole nother mental illness where like you can see who unfollows you.
Don't tell me about
it. Like the actual
people. That's not possible. That's not
possible. I had this mentally ill comic in LA when I met her. She was like in the green room. She's like, I'm going to follow all of you on Instagram and you have to follow me back. And if you follow me and unfollow me, I will know because I have the app that tells me. And I was like, bing, 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 you're unwell. I'm not following you.
Yeah.
So I never followed her. She followed me and then she ended up unfollowing me because she noticed that I never followed her back. And then, no, it gets worse. A year later, I hadn't seen her for like a year, run into her again. She's like, oh my God, hey, how are you? I'm going to follow you on Instagram. Follow me back. And I was like, and I just sat there and I was like, I'm not going to, but I'm not going to tell you that. And then I didn't. And then she followed and unfollowed me 17 times in 1 week. Because she thought I wasn't seeing that she was following me. So she was like waiting for me to follow her back. And then she DM'd me and she's like, hey, just wondering why you're not following me back. And I was like, because you need medical attention. Like this isn't, this isn't, your relationship with Instagram is not okay.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, that.
I ruined her life like for 2 weeks. You know, like I absolutely ruined her life. And then I remember.
And you don't even know each other.
No. And then she booked me on a show and then she forgot she booked me. So I was just like checking in. I was like, hey, oh no, this is what happened. I was getting off Instagram because I take it off my phone often. And like my social media manager won't check DMs. So I just was like, hey, I just want to make sure I'm still on the show. My social media manager is going to be taking, because we didn't have each other's phone number. So it's like my social media manager is going to be taking over Instagram, whatever. And she was like, I don't know why you're lying to me about having a social media manager. I've asked around and I know that you don't have one.
Oh my
God.
So
if you don't like me, just tell me.
Oh my God.
And I was like, what is happening right now? And then I like send her my contract with my social media manager. I'm like, and then I just finally snapped on her. I was like, your relationship with Instagram is insane. You're insane. You can't talk to people like this. Like, I was like, I hope you get the help that you need. And then,
then she unfollowed me. That was taken well.
She unfollowed me, but it took her like
for the 20th time.
Yeah.
Now?
But it took her like 2 months. And then that was the end. I was like, God bless. And then she quit comedy.
She wasn't, but that is sort of that's the tough thing, is that like it's tough to just be a comic these days. It's tough to just be a musician these days. It's tough to be just anything.
It's tough
to
be alive.
Well,
it's tough to just be out in this world, honestly.
Yeah. But I mean, that I suppose that's a whole other thing. But I mean, like, whatever your art form is, you then have this other level of promoting it, which is
right, which didn't used to exist. There used to be a company that just did that all for you.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's a give and a take, because now anybody can do it. But
right,
anybody can also fall down that spiral of sort of.
But then there's also some people who aren't ready for success getting it earlier because social media is just like catapulting them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think there's like this interesting thing of like really successful and funny TikTokers who think they can do stand up, selling out doing stand-up and not knowing how to do stand-up. So it's like this weird thing where it's like there's these really talented stand-ups who don't have the fan base yet, who can't sell out and aren't able to pay their bills doing something they're genuinely good at. And then these TikTokers who, I'm not taking anything away from them, but they're good at something completely different and then think they can do stand-up. And that's another problem.
Yeah. I was kind of one of those people who got like a sold out a show long before, well before I deserved it. I had 12 minutes.
Oh yeah.
12
oh,
minutes.
Yeah.
And
good for you.
I know. But I
how did that feel when you had to stand
terrifying,
up?
Terrifying. Super
an
terrifying. No, but I had 2 months to get like a full hour.
Oh, okay. Well, and that's so, still not a lot of time.
It's not a lot of time. And what I did, I cheated. I'd use the little PowerPoint and I incorporated like it into more of a one man show to start. And then eventually I got good enough at stand up that I sort of you know, dropped the beginner skis. Do you water ski?
No.
You didn't grow
I have I mean I have, but
yeah. Let's enough about me. Let's talk about you.
Yeah.
So you grew up in Wisconsin. Where on the hand? Point it out.
Right there.
Right there.
Like yeah, suburbs of Milwaukee. I went to Maguanago High School. I grew up in Big Bend, which is, there's 1,100 people there.
Yeah, what most
and
people...
dropping.
and dropping
and
rapidly.
Dropping, yeah.
So Alpine Valley, kind of in that
well, sure.
area. Did you go to Alpine?
Ish. Oh, yeah. Dave Matthews at Alpine.
Oh, you were a DMB fan.
No, I wasn't. I was just a fan of Misbehaving.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't really care about the music. I just
You just
liked
like
the party.
The party aspect of it. Did you start young with the party?
15, 16. I feel like that's actually pretty old here. I feel like everyone else started at like 10 or 11.
Well, I suppose I tried my first beer when I was like, I don't know, 8 or 9.
Yeah, I think 6 I tried my first beer.
What like, was it?
I don't remember. It was my dad just always had like a glass of beer at night. And I remember I was like, what is this? And he's like, try it. And
yeah.
Then I was like, I'm going to be an alcoholic. Because I hated the taste of it, but I loved how it made me feel. So that's just, you know. The
even then?
The yeah.
You had enough to change the way you felt?
Yeah, I chugged.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
your dad
like
let you chug
beer.
It?
Yeah, he didn't.
He didn't like.
He was just like, get going. It's in the family. Runs in the family, kid. Yeah.
It's wild. Yeah. We were able to take a sip off the from one of my folks' beers or something, like to try it. Nobody liked it, so.
Yeah, no, it tasted awful. And I never actually drank beer. When I started drinking, I drank like sweet, like Parrot Bay rum.
Oh.
But like I would drink an entire bottle. Like when I was 15, I would start with like an entire bottle of Parrot Bay rum.
Whoa. Yeah. Wait. So you started drinking and you'd have a bottle?
Yeah.
Like right away?
Yeah.
You had kind of a, because for people who don't know, you are
I'm
sober
now. Yeah.
So you can look back.
Yeah, look back and be like, there was some red flags. No, like my friends, it would be like 6 of us and we would be doing the booze run and everybody would be like, what do you want? And I'm like, I need my own bottle. And then you guys can have your own bottle. So
oh, wow.
It was like they would get one bottle to split between 5 and I would drink and one by myself.
You would do that an entire night?
Yeah.
Oh my, wow. Yeah.
And I really never like puked. I didn't get sick. I just was...
That's the curse right there.
Yeah.
Because for me, I get sick if I have too much.
Pretty quick. Near the end of my drinking, like late 20s, I started getting sick.
It catches up.
Yeah, it got me. But in the beginning, I mean, that was like my whole thing. I could outdrink everyone.
Well,
very impressive.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yes,
Colleen is.
Yes.
Oh, is that what it looks like?
Yes.
Parrot Bay rum. What
yes.
the hell?
Malibu.
Oh, is that? That's what's his face's rum?
Jimmy Buffett.
Jimmy
no,
Buffett.
It's not. He is. No, it's not. It's a whole different brand of trash. But.
Malibu, is that worth some
pineapple was my first hard like Malibu and pineapple. I was at my dad's wedding to my stepmom and her like gay uncle was like, let's get wasted. And I was like, love this energy.
Yeah.
Take me there. And we drank Malibu and pineapples all night long. And then my sister, who's 2 years older than me, she was like a square, found out I was drunk and got so mad at me. She's like, Dad, Brittany's drunk. I have to take her home. So my dad's like, take her home, whatever. It was me and my friend and my sister and her friend. And she takes me to the police station.
What?
She takes me to the police
station.
My sister.
What kind of sister? What kind of sister does
that? She was a narc.
Oh my God.
No. And she took me to the police station. She's like, I'm going to drop you off. She's like, this is where you deserve to be. You're going to go to jail.
How old is she at this
point? Well, I was probably, God, 14 or 15. So she's 60. She could drive 16 okay. or 17.
This yeah. is older sister energy.
This is older sister energy. And then she drove away, ultimately didn't drop me off at the police station. We get back to the house and I'm just like being lippy. I was just being, I was like, yeah. And then she punched me in the face.
Did she? She got you.
She punched me. She knocked me out.
She knocked you out cold?
I mean, not cold, but like I fell on my back and I was like, and then I called my dad and I was like, Heather punched me and I just ruined their wedding. They had to come home from their wedding.
Oh my God.
And that was the beginning of the end. My stepmom hated me. I mean, she didn't like me before that, but she was like, you ruined my wedding. And I was like,
you didn't punch yourself. No, I
was
like,
it wasn't me. It was Heather being an
although,
arc.
You know, some could argue that you could have settled that on your own. You know,
punched her back.
Yeah.
I really don't think I had the skills.
Yeah.
I was pretty...
And violence isn't the answer.
Yeah.
Kids.
It's not. Yeah. It's not the it's answer. Not the and answer. Also, yeah, I feel like I did win that because now when we talk about it, I'm like, well, you're the one who lost your temper and punched me. You know,
that's true. Yeah.
Whenever you look back on violence, if you didn't lose your cool, you win.
True.
Yeah.
Even if you were a full bottle of Parapet deep.
Yeah. Malibu pineapples.
My first beer was Red Dog. Do you ever have Red Dog?
Oh, yeah. Wait, no, I had Mad Dog 40/40.
Oh, whoa. Yeah. Wow. I was talking beer. You were talking yeah. something way different.
Yeah. What even is that?
Mad Dog?
Yeah.
Oh, it's like.
I mean, like, I remember the taste, but what is it considered?
It's a malt liquor of
a
some
malt
sort.
Liquor,
Colleen,
yes.
What is it?
It says it's fortified wine.
Fortified wine? Oh my God.
I used to drink Four Locos and chase it with Mad Dog 20 times.
Oh,
like Four the original Loco. Four Locos. Do you remember those?
Oh, my buddy, we would call him the Hurricane every time he drank Four Loco because yeah. he just turned into a hurricane. Four Loco, there is something that like is banned by the cartel in Four Loco. Like
it was
even the
gasoline
cartel
and
like,
crack.
Yeah.
They had to like redo it. They're like, let's try yeah. this again.
Hey, maybe bath salts is not something yeah. you should put in this concoction.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it
college
was totally
days.
Marketed to like college underage.
Children.
Yeah.
Yeah. And do you remember Juice? It was called Juice. It was Little John's version of Four Loco.
Like that crunk stuff or whatever.
Yeah, but it was just called Juice. And it was literally like little, I think it was Little John.
Spelt the same?
It might have been J-O-O-S-E, but honestly.
Interesting.
I don't remember. It was called Juice.
Joe's.
I used to at Joe's. Maybe it was just Juice. Yeah. What is it?
It's J-O-O-S-E.
Told you.
Juice.
Yeah. You
interesting.
Said.
Interesting. Yeah. You can't just. That's. You can't just. Market the name Juice because trademark wise, you got. That's why you got to spell it.
You
funny.
Think that's taken?
100%. Well. It's
I don't
too
think you
common.
Can just take, yeah, I don't think you can just take Juice.
Yeah.
And trademark it.
Because I was looking into that.
Trademarking Juice?
No, Old Fashioned.
Oh, okay.
And they're like, yeah, it's
yeah,
not going to work.
Do that.
Yeah. I'm like, are you sure?
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, we're sure.
Nope, Juice. Oh, man, all that.
Swill. It back.
Swill that yeah. I used to just drink.
It's terrible. Mm-hmm. But so, okay. Well, so you're drinking and you're in Wisconsin. Do you do any like, what's the most Wisconsin thing that, like, you know, from your childhood that you remember doing?
Well, I mean, I went to Maguanago High School, so, like, you know, it was a lot of tractors and farm stuff. Like, I remember going in, like, barns and getting hammered yeah. and, like, riding around on tractors.
That's pretty Wisconsin. Or like, don't do that, kids, by the way.
Yeah,
we're not endorsing that.
Nope.
Heavy machinery and alcohol does not mix. Just
things have changed.
Yeah, things. Well, they haven't, but.
Yeah. Well, that's true. People's perception of things have changed.
Yeah,
it used
yeah,
to
yeah.
not be so frowned upon. But yeah, I remember like just being in a barn or like being wasted, and there was like chicks, like little chicks, and I would just like pet little chickens.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not something I've done anywhere else.
It's so funny. I would go to my buddy's farm, and we would go on these tractor rides, and we would all be riding in the big old lift, uh-huh. you know, and just as like an elevated seat,
yeah.
you know, and yeah, that could have easily dropped, you know.
Yeah, yeah, we all could have died, but
yeah, kid stuff.
We made it.
Kid stuff, yeah.
We made it.
No ice fishing, nothing like that?
I did ice fishing a few times. I remember one time I went ice fishing with my dad and my Uncle Danny. And my Uncle Danny brought one of his girls. My Uncle Danny's wild.
Okay.
Like, he, like, spends a lot of time in Colombia and fishing.
Okay, fishing and, with quotes. Wow.
Fishing in Colombia, and he came with...
Is Danny his real name, or using an alias right now?
No, Danny's his real name, okay. But he'll never...
He'll never know.
Yeah,
got
he has
it.
A flip phone. Like,
cool.
He's, yeah,
cool.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So you're protected.
Yeah,
got
he's
it.
Fine.
Yeah.
He brought his girlfriend, who...
Another air quote.
Yeah, yeah. Was just a stripper, and she had just had, like, she was so cool. I loved her. She had, like, green hair and a tongue ring, and her name was Dawn, and she was just, like...
Real name, Dawn?
Yeah, think? I think so. Well, okay. I mean, I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know. Okay. It was many years ago.
He just met her?
He just met her, and he brought a stripper with us ice fishing, probably at the strip club.
Okay.
I would imagine he took her, yeah, from work. He captured her.
Well, capture. Okay, now we're in different territory. So he just brought a stripper ice fishing.
Yeah. And that was the only time I remember ice fishing, because she was great.
I mean,
she was a lot of fun.
Okay, she was wearing more than what she would wear to work. She was wearing more than work attire.
Yeah,
she was
well
comfortable.
Yeah, she was great.
Did she tell you that she was a stripper, or did Danny, or did your
she
dad?
She was saying she was a dancer, and my dad's like, whoa. Like, and she's like, no, I just dance. And yeah, I remember. And then later I was like, what happened there? And my dad was like, yeah, that was a stripper.
Oh, your dad then told you.
Yeah. Yeah. Later.
Wow.
Because I liked her so much. I kept bringing her up. I'm like, where's that dancer Dawn? I love her. And he's like, she's probably wrapped around a pole right now and not a fishing pole.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. Wow. I mean, so interesting. Yeah. So that was I didn't expect. Did you guys catch fish?
Yeah, I think so.
What did Dawn catch?
I don't remember.
Yeah, maybe a sunfish. You know,
I don't know.
You know, the Dawn.
Yeah,
you know, sun,
I do not remember.
Dawn. There's something there. There's a joke there. What did you always want to be a comedian?
No.
How'd you get into this whole deal? How'd you get going down the wrong tracks here?
Yeah.
You know.
Honestly, well, when I moved to LA, I went to go visit a friend in Arizona, and I got a DUI.
Uh-huh.
And then I had to go to jail for that DUI.
Oh, wow. They're very strict about it.
Very strict. They have zero tolerance. It's not like Wisconsin.
Wisconsin has all too lenient laws, largely.
Yeah, it's just like a rite of passage.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible here.
Not good. Way worse in Arizona, though, especially coming from Wisconsin, because I was like pretty fresh to LA. So I had been in Wisconsin like 6 months prior. And when I got my DUI, I was like, I'm going to be fine. And I wasn't fine. And I had to go to jail for 30 days. And I was like, pretty depressed. And then I worked at an ad agency, and the guy that I sat across from was a strategist, but he also did comedy on the side.
Yeah.
And he was like quitting to do comedy full time. And he was like, you're really funny. And he's like, I know you're like going through it right now. Cause I was going to jail it to go to sleep. Like, he's like, I know you're going through it right now. He's like, if you can't afford therapy, you should try comedy.
That's what he said.
Yeah. He's like, because it's like therapy, but it's cheap. It's free.
It's free.
Yeah. So
that's what signed you up.
Like, he literally quit, and he went to Afghanistan to perform for the troops. And he called me every week for like 6 weeks until I finally signed up for like this writing class. And it was the best thing I ever did.
Which writing class was it?
Jerry Katzman's comedy writing class. It's like it's not 6 weeks. Maybe it's 12. It's like very intense. And it's a total trust fall, because you just tell this guy everything about yourself, like the things that scare you the most, the things, you know. And at the time I was still drinking, so I didn't like know I was an alcoholic yet. And like just like all these things where he then like kind of helps you navigate. Like, it's like we start here with the easy stuff to talk about, like what's funny about being from Wisconsin is, you know what I mean? And then like we get into the darker stuff, the going to jail and all that
stuff.
You
know what's funny is like, I'm actually super fascinated in this. Now, was this a group class?
Yeah. So there's 10 of us in the class.
And would you say this in front of everybody? You're like deep, dark secrets, or is this one on one?
No. So you write it all down.
Yeah.
Like, it's the assignment before you start the class is to answer all of these questions. Yeah. And it's intense. It's like pages and pages of questions. Mm-hmm. And he's like, the more honest you are with me, the more successful we're going to be. So I just was like, I had nothing to lose. I was like, here's everything. And then he just like guides you, you know, kind of through it. He teaches you how to write premises, how to write act outs, you know, kind of how to find your voice. And then at the end of it, you have you know, anywhere between a 5 and 7 minute set. And then the like finale of the class is getting on stage at the haha.
Okay. That's the haha. How about that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then you film it. And then if you're any good, you can send that film to bookers. And it actually very quickly started going well for me. Like after that class, like I got a lot of things really quickly. And then
I want to get to when you got things right. But before that, I just want to talk about this class. Was there like some sort of, I took this Meisner class in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And for people who don't know, it's like where you kind of, I don't know, repeat stuff. That's sort of the basics of like, I am wearing a red coat. You are wearing a red coat, like with a partner. But then he could sort of broke that down more. And like, he would be kind of like emotionally abusive to you on stage, like in front of everybody to sort of elicit some sort of emotional response. Was there anything like that in that class? Or was he pretty kind?
The emotional abuse was psychological abuse.
I don't know the difference.
Okay. If you don't bring it, like he's not going to embarrass you in that way, like try and embarrass you in front of people.
Yeah.
But if you don't bring it, like if you don't write well, if you don't dig deep, if you don't do the things that he tells you to do, he kind of is like, why are you wasting everyone's time?
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? And by the way, that psychological abuse has stuck with me my entire career because I still write with him. Like I still will do writing sessions with him where I spend like 3 months and it's like, if I don't show up with jokes, he's going to be mad at me. And that like continues to make me produce.
That's great. And, do you think, are there a lot of comics in LA that go to him? Because I've also heard that a lot of comics be like, oh, never do a writing class. I've done writing classes. But
every comic I know that I work with and that I respect has done a writing class.
Isn't that interesting? I must be thinking of people at open mics who said that.
Or just like very old school people who didn't even have the option for a writing class.
Yeah.
Where it's like, that's like a very old mentality. I can't think of a single person who wouldn't be like, yeah, if there's a cheat code, take it. Because like just even like structurally how to write a joke or what's going on, there is like a little bit of magic, but you can teach that magic rather than going to 3 years worth of open mics. Because that's what I equate that class to. It's like you can do open mics for 3 years and figure it out, or you can take this class for 3 months or 12, whatever it is, and figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, it's like if somebody knows this and you, why not tap into that knowledge? And also you learn a lot of bad habits at open mics, I find.
Also, they're just the worst in LA. I mean, it's
suck.
All comics. Nobody wants to laugh at you. It's the darkest, loneliest group of people. I never did an open mic.
I did a ton. I did Fourth Wall where you pay $5.
Yeah.
I paid to have people just stare at me like this and read their jokes as I was telling jokes.
Right.
I do think that made me okay with bombing horrifically.
Yeah, you're going to. Yeah, sure.
You're going to do that anyway.
Yeah. You're going to have to figure that out. If you're going to be a comic, you have to figure that out anyway.
The Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Barron, Saturdays and Sundays at noon on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
All right, who's ready to eat? We got brats for dinner, marshmallows for dessert.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. While no firm conclusion has yet been made as to the origins of the COVID-19 virus, and several U.S. agencies have judged the pandemic was started by natural transmission, The Wall Street Journal reporting today that the U.S. Energy Department has now concluded that an accidental lab leak is most likely how it began. Intense fighting this weekend in Ukraine as the battle for Bakhmut continues. ABC's Patrick Reval is in Kyiv.
Video released by Russian state media showing the devastation there. Ukraine's top ground forces commander in the city, helping personally direct the defense. Both sides believed to have already suffered thousands of casualties, according to Ukrainians fighting on the ground, but Ukraine saying it is holding the line for now.
A temporary halt on the cleanup of potentially toxic soil from the East Palestine, Ohio train derailment after soil and water was apparently dumped in Michigan and Texas by railroad operator Norfolk Southern. Tuesday, the Supreme Court to consider Republican challenges to President Biden's student debt relief program. This is ABC News.
Go by any construction site in Wisconsin, you're going to see a lot of Michael's trucks. Since 2014, they've had more than $1 billion worth of contracts with the state government.
A large part of those coming with Foxconn without any results in that area.
Do we want a governor who might be giving his brothers the contract? I think he needs to answer that before the election.
We'll just kick that one down the road. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But of course, Michael's corporation would get to build that said bridge.
Listen, Monday through Friday from 2 to 3, it's Dueling Tangents.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips that you plan in advance, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends for which you make a group chat 3 months before so that nobody or anything is missing? Or your daughter's first birthday party. You planned it with such dedication that instead of the first, it felt like our quinces. The same way you plan each detail for those moments. Start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Protecting your family is the best plan you can make. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays? The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Kripescast on Civic Media. If you're just tuning in now, I'm talking with comedian Brittany Schmidt. You've had some interesting bombs. Do you want to talk about those or
no? Sure, I don't care. Yeah, why not? Any other trauma you want to take?
No. I just, a lot of times when I have comics up here, I've had some really bad bombs myself. So yeah. I just
How about you tell me about yours first?
Okay. okay. This was like... one of my first times going up, I always thought I absolutely crushed at my brother's wedding, doing the best man speech. Mm-hmm. My other brothers also gave the best man speech, and I think I had a better one.
Right.
Yeah. So I was riding high, and I went to this open mic, and I wrote everything down.
From the speech? Were you reading the speech?
No. I just wrote a 5-minute set. And I went up there. I was like, this is going to murder. I was listening to other people go up there, not getting any laughs. I was like, I'm so smart. You know that feeling too. And now if I ever feel that feeling, I'm like, shut up. Yep. That is not the feeling you want. And then I got up there and I started doing the whole thing. Crickets off the top. Forgot 2 minutes of my whole thing. So the beginning and the end didn't connect. The only laugh I got the whole time was something I made up on stage.
Yeah.
Didn't go back. This was on Venice Boulevard in the back of some coffee shop. So it was outside. Mm-hmm. And so it was not a good venue to begin with. Outside is not always the best. And I didn't get back up on stage for 6 months.
Love that.
Yeah. Super okay, sad, so Charlie.
That is the... for me, that's the tell that I'm going to bomb. So the first time I was ever headlining, I was at the House of Comedy in Minnesota at the Mall of America.
Oh, yeah. I've played that. I've done that so many times.
Oh, my God. The venue itself, the people that run it are great. They're wonderful people. The venue itself, it's like you could fly hot air balloons in there. The ceilings are so high, which is not great for comedy.
I didn't even notice that.
They're so high.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
So all of the laughs, I mean, for people who don't know comedy, you want low ceilings, you know, the acoustics to be, anyway, in your favor. So I brought this person on the road with me. Do you know Mateen Stewart?
Not personally.
Okay. He was my feature, and I love Mateen. He's very talented. But what I did was, because I wasn't, like, I didn't have a big following yet, I hired a local comic to bring people. I was like, you need to fill the place.
Oh, wow. And smart.
Yeah. And she was like, yes, absolutely. Like, I'll bring all my friends, blah, 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 whatever. Great. So I get there and there's like 80 people there. That's plenty for me. Like, I'm like, that's great. Okay. That's fine. Whatever.
That's like 300 capacity, 400
capacity. Yeah. So it's not.
It's a bigger room.
Yeah, it is a bigger room. Yeah. But it was like, I was thrilled because I'm like, if I would have done this on my own, there'd be 6 people here. So.
Oh, yeah. That's not fun.
She did her job. She brought all of the people. And she goes up and she does fine.
Yeah.
And then Mateen goes up and crushes. I mean, just murders. And I was just like,
I'm getting a feeling in my stomach just thinking about this. And you're sitting back at that kitchen.
I'm just sitting back waiting there. No, and I'm like, well, if he's doing well, I'm in a crush.
Oh,
yeah. I am an egomaniac. And I'm also drinking Diet Cokes. And I think at the time I wasn't drinking any caffeine. So my energy was just like a hummingbird.
Yeah.
But in my head, I'm like, I'm going to kill. When I say I got up there and I bombed for 45 minutes straight. And it was just, I was like, what's happening here? And like, for those of you who don't know my comedy, I'm very dark and I'm very dirty. And they're just all looking at me like stunned. The show's over. Mateen and I are outside afterwards. I didn't even want to be out there, but he's like, you have to be a pro and just come out and say whatever, hello to people. And everyone's saying to Mateen, they're like, Mateen, you are so, like, you're so funny. You're so great. You're da 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 da. And like, this woman came up to me and she's like, you're so pretty.
Oh my God.
I was like, and the reason I was doing with this show was because I was getting ready to film my special.
No.
I had a moment of like, I should quit. I don't think I can do this. And like, it was just like such a trigger for me too. Cause I remember in high school, like I wasn't popular in high school and I was on the volleyball team. And I remember our coach was like making us do this circle where they're like, go around and say two things nice about the person to the right of you. Yeah. The person to the left of me was like, Brittany's really pretty.
Oh my God.
And then she's like, just like say something else, like not superficial. And she's like, That's it. She's just really pretty. And I was like, like it's like an actual trauma when people say
trauma
that.
Shovel.
Yeah.
This.
Yeah. So it was horrible. And then the opener, who's very sweet, like was just like, hey, do you want to like grab lunch tomorrow? And everything in me said no. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to. But I was like, you know what? Just be whatever. Just show up. Go to lunch, whatever.
Yeah, it's very Midwest nice of you.
Yeah. And I was talking to her and she's like, yeah, so I brought my whole Bible study to the show. That's who the crowd was.
Could have been useful information.
You should have told me that.
Wow.
Immediately. So it's like 90 people from her Bible study. Yeah. And I have like all these filthy jokes. And I'm just like, they were just praying for me.
Yeah, they were praying for me.
And I'm like,
oh,
that would have been useful. Immediately. So at least there was a reason it was so bad, but it doesn't make it any less horrific. That's tough. Pretty bad.
That's tough.
But now it was Mateen's birthday show two days ago, whenever, I don't know what time is. But he brought me on stage. He's like, this next comic is very pretty.
That's hilarious. Super
it's
funny.
Like a running joke with us now. Yeah.
That's awesome. Wow. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. But the special, So you start comedy kind of later than I would say most comedians. How old were you when you started?
23.
No, that's pretty much.
23. But I did 23 to 25. And then I got in a relationship and I was like, I'm happy and I have nothing to talk about now. And I quit comedy for like 2 years. And then I came back. So I think that was difficult because then I came back in like 2018, 2019. And then 2020 was the pandemic. So,
you know, it's been kind of a wild thing, but you've had so many great opportunities and you've had so many like you've done a lot of, like you did Don't Tell and you had the like a bunch of clips kind of blow up. So I mean, yeah. how did it go from like, you know, being sort of a comedian doing the mics, doing the work, doing the comedy
not
thing
the
to
mics.
Kind of getting the, or not doing the mics, but doing the class.
Yeah.
You just never did any mics. You just got booked on shows right away.
Yeah. So after I did that class, like I said, I got very lucky. Like there was just like a few things that happened where it was like moving.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's like, I quickly like opened for Bobby Lee. I quickly like started getting booked on shows with like Theo Vaughn and Damon Wayans and like all these people where it was just like, it was kind of happening for me, but I was also still drinking and I was kind of treating it like a party, like not a career.
Mm.
I remember being drunk in a green room once and one of my friends coming because she was so excited about the lineup and who was on it. And the fact that I was on it was like insane. And she's like, why are you drunk at work? And I was like, this isn't work. You know what I mean? Like I wasn't, cause I had a day job in advertising, so I wasn't taking it seriously. So I think that got in the way a little bit. So I think like taking that break, even though I regret it a little bit, like I got sober in that break and then I was able to come back and approach it with like a seriousness that I didn't have before that. So then once I felt like I was behind, I felt like I had a lot of, I had to make up for lost time. So I very quickly was like, okay, these jokes are old, but they're good, but I want to burn them. So I want to film a special.
Yep.
And then I remember my manager at the time, I was like, hey, I think I want to film a special. Cause like I said, I used to work in advertising. So I know a lot of people that can get done.
Yep.
And like, it wouldn't be a ton of money and they would make it look really good. So I told him, I was like, I want to film a special. And he was like, I don't think you should. He's like, I think you should wait for like Netflix or Comedy Central or someone to find you. And I was like, okay. And I kind of took that. And then I talked to my friends in Austin, who have a production company, and my other friend who's a director. And they're like, we can get, like, let's just do it. Like, if you want to do it, let's just do it. And so then I called my manager back and I was like, so I'm doing this, like, with or without you. And then my manager was like, oh yeah, amazing. Like, all gung ho about it, you know, wanted to EP it. And he was great. He was very helpful. But like, it was one of those things where I had to like not listen to his advice and listen to my gut. Cause yeah, I was like, I'm ready to get these jokes out, you know?
Yeah. I think it's just tough to do that. Listen to your gut sometimes, in this sort of business. So
yeah, but you have to,
yeah.
Cause otherwise people will just tell you, like, it's like, I don't know, you know what's best for you creatively. I knew those jokes were cooked. I also think I kind of knew, like, a lot of those jokes were about being married and like my was not working there. So I kind of was like, I was like, I got to get these
out.
You
got to get, get them out while it still makes sense.
Well, it still makes sense. Yeah. And then, you know, obviously we were like going through our separation and divorce when the editing and the clipping and like all that stuff was happening. I was like, oh, this is just horrible foreshadowing. Yeah. Like all of the jokes are about how badly I want to be single. So that was brutal, but putting it out was great. And like, yeah, I mean, it went way better than I would have ever imagined.
And then you kind of see, is that the point where you see your social media following jump from like whatever the standard, I have a social media account to like a substantial following? Was that kind of off of those or what?
Yeah, in 2022, it went from 20,000 followers to 190.
Oh, wow.
And that's all from those clips.
Yeah. And that's sort of, so like for other comics out there who are like, ah, I know I've got like great material, but I don't know how to get my stuff shot, you know? Like what do you say to that? Like what do you do?
I mean, just it's so easy now. Like even, you know, clips from iPhones are going
viral.
So it's like just bring your iPhone to your show, shoot your set and clip it up. It's just so you can do it all on iMovie. It's so easy. And then if you have money and you want to shoot a real special, like there are people who will get it done. Like I remember when I was talking to my manager, he's like, it's going to take like 90 to 100,000 to get this done. And I was like, no, you're talking to the wrong people. Because like for me, I worked in advertising and like all those people work on like multi-hundred-thousand-dollar, million-dollar campaigns. Like I used to work with people that worked at Apple, but they're not like creatively satisfied, satiated. So they know how to make something look beautiful and they want those side projects. So it's just about like finding and knowing the right people that are going to make it look good enough, you know?
Yeah. I think too, like when I was first in LA, I was like trying to network with like people who had like were successful or whatever, but that was like the wrong kind of networking. I think it's good to network, but network to find other creatives that you can like make stuff with. So I think.
Yeah. I think that's a big lesson. It's like, nobody's going to give you anything. It doesn't matter how much they believe in you or how much they say they are going to give you something. That was like a big lesson when my special came out too. I can't tell you how many of those big dog comics were like, I'm going to have you on my podcast. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And when my special came out, it was just, even some of my closest friends are just like, sorry, I can't have you on. Joe Rogan's on this week. And I'm like, all righty. But it kind of made it more satisfying when it took off on its own. Cause then I was like, I have nobody to thank. You know what I mean? Except for the team that shot it and, you know.
Right.
That's it.
Right. Yeah. That's always interesting too. Cause there's a lot of yes in LA and like, oh, you're amazing. Yeah. Let's get you to do this. There's a lot of talk.
Oh my God, everybody loves everything you do always, but they're not going to help you.
Yeah.
Until you're above them.
Yeah.
Until you crawl above them, then they're like, we should collab on this. I'm like, oh yeah, because it's helpful to you now.
Yeah.
So no.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, it's like, or it's good to think about that when maybe you are, you know, seeing people for like what their talent is, not for what their like social media numbers are. you know?
I think some it's hard to differentiate for a lot of people.
We're in like that Black Mirror thing, yes, where like your follower number is like above your head.
Yes.
You know?
Where you're not talented until you're validated. Like, yeah, 100%. Again, just last year, I finally hit a point where I don't have to reach out to people to get booked on stuff. People reach out to me.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where it's like, you know, bookers, God bless their soul, like their clout chasers too. Like they need you to have numbers to help promote the show, to do this, to do that. Where it's like, you're not, even though I'm telling the same jokes or similar jokes and I'm the same comic, now people think I'm worth having on their shows. Yeah. When I wasn't before.
Yeah. I do also want to say though, there are a lot of great comics who like, and great creators who like, they may have a huge following, but they're down if you have a good idea. There's a lot of those too.
Yeah.
There's I don't want to say it's all the one way. But yeah, so like, okay, so you kind of have you have a lot of material out there. You know, you're doing the clip game and everything like that on your social media. Where do you like want to take this? Do you have an idea in your head of where to take this, to be like, oh yeah, I made it? Or do you already feel like, oh yeah, I made it?
No. I love stand-up. I always want to do stand-up, but I want to do movies. I mean, I'm a writer and a screenwriter, and I want to do that stuff.
Yeah.
It seems just more fun and more stable, and the people you get to hang out with just seem a little more... I don't know. Comics are very dark.
Yeah.
Very dark group of people, and I'm a pretty dark person, but, like, it's just a lot on the soul to, like, have to, like, hang out. And, like, you know, I love comics, but, like, I remember listening to... Will Ferrell on the Dax podcast, Dax Shepard's podcast. And he was like, why did you never do stand-up? You're so funny. And Will Ferrell was like, have you ever hung out with stand-up comics? He's like, they're the worst group of people in the world. And I remember hearing that when I didn't believe that. And then, like, I think just the more that's come out about people that I thought I knew and, like, things that have happened in our industry where I'm just like, this is kind of dark. You know, I would like to be in a more controlled environment on set shooting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think that is about comics, though? Is it they're all using it for therapy? Is it that?
Maybe. I think, yeah, you do have to be a certain level of, like, unwell to seek that kind of validation, or something has to have gone kind of wrong.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe to a degree. I mean, I don't know. It's such an interesting art form, I guess, in that, like, you're doing it. It's not like you're with a band. You know, playing,
right?
You know, I mean, you're doing this by yourself, and so you almost take every laugh personally.
Yeah,
if you're doing it wrong, I suppose you can't do it that way, but I suppose it's hard to avoid that.
Yeah,
and when they don't laugh, maybe that hits where you're already wounded, because you're right up there for a reason, right?
Right,
because you're trying to get some sort of validation, maybe.
Yeah. You're trying to fix something, I think. And it's like, you know, there's this beautiful thing with stand-up where you can heal yourself and you can heal others at the same time.
Well, yeah.
But then if they don't like your jokes, then everybody's just a little more injured.
Yeah.
after my set, at least. Everyone's a little more sad.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've written a very funny film, which and very heartfelt and very... I read your screenplay. It's awesome. And that kind of goes into your life. Is semi-autobiographical, would you call it?
We'll call it semi. We're going to have to say that it's not. We're going to have to say I just made that all up. I mean, it's not a true story, but there's like a lot of true components.
Right.
Yeah.
And how has sort of your personal life influenced your art, I guess? And do you think that when comedy is done right, you find something in yourself that though so personal and so unique to you is universally relatable? Is that kind of the mission?
Yeah, all of my comedy is painfully true. Like, obviously I'll add little things to make it funnier or whatever, but most of it all just comes from my experience, which I think, you know, makes it great when people can relate to it, and then also difficult when people don't like it, because it's like more personal. Whereas I think when you do more like Seinfeld type comedy where you're like, the bathroom door is da da da, like, if people don't like it, who cares? You know what I mean? It's an observation about a bathroom door. But
yeah, as someone who does a lot of that kind of stuff, yeah, I can tell you it still hurts.
Does it?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Just so you know. Just, yeah.
Really?
Solidarity. No, I'm
kidding.
Like,
it probably hurts. Obviously, it hurts the ego, but it doesn't hurt the soul.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Where I'm like, when I'm talking about, like, I talk about my mom's suicide and like that kind of stuff. And like, when people aren't down to laugh with me, I'm like, I'm trying to make the best out of a bad situation. So it sucks that you're not helping me.
Yeah, right.
But then also, you know, I have to be mindful. It is like such a tricky thing to talk about. So it's, yeah, my stand up and my art, it's all kind of like a tightrope, but it's like I want to talk about things that are true to me and my experience, because that's all I have to offer.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
That's like different from anyone else, is me and what I've been through.
Yeah. And that is such an interesting thing, because some people are heavy their experience at in their life, or they have, you know, sort of these preconceived things about that.
Mm-hmm.
And really anything dealing with life and death and religion and all that, it kind of scares people a lot.
Yeah.
And they're not like willing to laugh at it.
Yeah, it's traumaty. It's like a completely different thing.
Is that what you would call it?
Yeah.
Like what? Like your main.
I wouldn't say all of it is, because obviously some of it's very dumb and, you know, talking about things that are a lot lighter than that. But I would say with my new hour, I have 15 minutes that can really scare people.
Mm.
You know,
do you always aim for a tight 15 that can scare the crap out of someone?
No, it's just I know when I'm heading into that part of my set where I might lose everyone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I have to like warn them. I'm like, here we go.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm like, if you thought that was bad, it gets, you know,
right.
It's going to get worse.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful. It's like more beautiful than when the people love it. Like, cause it is like a healing thing, where I've had people come up to me and be like, I lost someone to suicide in this joke. Like I rewatch it. Mm. It. You know what I mean? Where I feel like it has the power to heal the people that are open to be being healed.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely does. You know, it's a thing that someone can send you that clip or whatever. They can send it to you if you're going through that situation. And,
right.
Yeah. And that's a super great thing in that respect. Do you think, let's say you become, your movie takes off, which I think it will.
Yeah.
You know, I think it'll get produced and do very well. If that happens, will stand-up comedy always be a part of your life?
Yes.
Why?
Because there's nothing quite like it.
The thrill of the bomb.
Well, I'm an addict. Like, don't forget that.
Still
and
an
I
addict.
Have nothing left. Okay. You know, I'm an addict who doesn't drink, who doesn't do drugs. Yeah. And there is no high in the world like stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
When it's great, it is the best. And then when it's bad, it's the worst. It's truly an addiction. Like, it's, you know, it's like both sides of the coin, where like when it's great, it's the best. It is the best. Like, I just had two shows at the Hollywood Improv Sunday night, and they were both back to back just killer shows. And I was like, oh, this is it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm, and then when I, you know, don't do well, I'm like, I should get out of here.
Yeah. how do you deal with the, you know, you're going to continue doing it. How do you deal with the rejection, the bombs, the bad jokes, the terrible comments that, you know, people will give you? How do you deal with that?
Well, the comments I just try to avoid, because I realize, you know, a lot of people sitting there, I can't imagine a world where I would ever go on anybody's thing where they're putting themselves out there and making art and I would say something negative, because it's so brave to even try that. Like, I feel like if you're in a position where you're willing to take someone else down, you just need to go make your own art.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's just a person who's stuck, who feels bad about what they're doing with their life, who wants you to feel bad about what you're doing with your life.
Right.
So it's like that. I try and look at it that way all the time. Sometimes it gets me. Like, sometimes someone will say something that's very poignant and I'm like, they got a point. You know what I mean?
When they hit you with the thing you already know.
Yes.
I know.
It's something that's inside of me where they just find it and they hit it. It's like my mom. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like a sniper. Like, she knows like the one thing.
The weakness.
Yes.
You can see right through
you. Yes. So like when someone's like, women aren't funny, or stop talking about sex or whatever, I'm just like, oh my God, shut up. Like, whatever. But that stuff, I just, you know, like I said, I have a social media manager, so I try not to look at it too much. And she doesn't care. She doesn't, it's not personal to her if that stuff comes up. But when I bomb, it's less devastating than it used to be. You know, I'm more centered. I'm more like, this is just part of the job. I'm a pro. We have good days and we have bad days.
Meditate, yoga, anything that helps.
Meditation. Transcendental meditation changed my life.
Yeah, I do that too.
I'm just like...
Yeah.
I'm just kind of like, whatever. We just got to keep going.
Yeah.
It's just a long game. You just keep going and then something happens. That's the other thing. I'm not married to like how this career unfolds. Like, I'm just excited to see what happens.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on. Where can people find you and everything like that?
My social media manager is on Instagram.
Okay, good.
Brittany
good.
Schmidt, BrittanySchmidt. No D in my last name. I took all those in college.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, we'll end on a punchline here. We'll end on a punchline. And then you'll get some offended emails by that too.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Emails. Cool. Are you going to give out my email address? You're like, this is where you send the hate mail.
I'll forward you anyone's that we get.
Okay, just, great. I can't wait.
I'll forward them to your social media manager.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
I get bad emails sometimes too. It's okay.
All right. Well, congrats. Yeah. That means you're doing something.
Doing something. cool. And you are the first person to be in what Mike.
You're listening to WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W2.